to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Dr. Wonders.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1996 movie That Thing You Do, written, directed, and co-starring Tom Hanks. Okay, so Brother Jay, tell me why we're watching That Thing You Do.
It's just one of those happy, funny, feel-good movies. I haven't seen it in a while, so I wanted to watch it again. But I remember it fondly because it had like catchy music and... catchy tunes, and it seemed it had some great actors and great moments. And for the most part, 95% of the movie is a fun, kind of fun up kind of movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. I had never seen this movie before. I was a little bit cautious, let's say, wary, maybe, because it's almost 2.5 hours long. But it's good. It's fun.
2.5 hours long?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it's 2 hours and 26 minutes long.
Oh, because IMDb listed as 108 minutes.
No.
Huh. Must have one of the different editions. Because I know that they went back and added a whole bunch of stuff back in. So well, the extended cut.
Hmm. I wonder if that's the one I got from Netflix. But still, I must have had a longer cut because seriously, mine says 226.
Wow. I'll have to look. I watched it the other night and I don't remember. I mean, maybe it's because I really like this movie, but I didn't feel like that long.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was fine. It turned out it was fine, but yeah, it was daunting to start with, but it's really good. I mean, I agreed. It was good. I was a little put off by the casting, and I know it was kind of a thing. Like Tom Hanks did not want to cast Tom Edward Scott as the role of Guy Patterson, for the same reason I had a hard time with him. It's because he looks like Tom Hanks.
Oh, see, I would have gone with he looks like John Mayer.
No, I thought if Tom Hanks and Jim Carrey had a baby, he would look like Tom Everett Scott.
That's a terrible thing to say. Jim Carrey shouldn't have children with anyone.
Does he have kids? He doesn't have kids.
Carrey?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he has kids.
I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt. He has one child.
Okay. What's the child's name?
I have no idea because it's not listed. It just says, okay. Wikipedia says, children, one.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, but I was surprised first thing with, this is a Charlize Theron movie.
Yeah.
And it must have been one of her first. I didn't do that research, but I'm kind of woeful on the research on this particular movie. And the story is actually pretty simple, which actually makes it very appealing.
Sorry, it was Charlize Theron's third movie.
Was it before or after, like, the...
Okay, there were two movies before it, Children of the Corn 3.
Mighty Joe Young?
And 2 Days in the Valley.
Okay.
Mighty Joe Young is 2 years after That Thing You Do.
Oh, okay. So it and everybody does a good job in this movie. And I was surprised by the cameos, too, and they were fun.
Yeah, there were lots of cameos. It was weird for me to see a lot of actors in here that I've seen since. And obviously, this movie is a little bit It's a little bit older. It's creeping up on 20 years. But seeing a very young Liv Tyler and then a very young Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh, yeah. And he was barely in it, but it was funny.
Yeah. And of course, Chris Isaac, which is always, he's always fun.
Oh, yeah. Chris Isaac is. And what about our friend Kevin Pollak?
Indeed. I really did Kevin Pollak, and he was really kind of playing a great asshole.
Yeah, he did a great job. But, yeah, so shall we dive into the plot?
Yeah.
Well, okay, actually...
Not a real complex plot, so...
No, not at all. And it's definitely... I mean, it's a time and a place kind of movie, and it's 1964... And so it's it's the Beatles are a thing. They are actually mentioned quite a bit. So the Beatles exist, but they're still like British invasion Beatles. They haven't evolved into world conquering Beatles quite yet. They were the mop tops on Ed Sullivan. They weren't the walrus cuckoo cuckoo.
Yeah. I think this is almost as if they were the American parallel version of the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what they were going for. But we have this group in Erie, Pennsylvania. And our main character, Guy Patterson, is not actually a member of this group. He is a aspiring jazz drummer who works at his family's appliance store. And his family is great. He knows the other cats in town who are forming a band, and they consist of Jimmy Mattingly, played by Jonathan Scheck, Lenny Heiss, I think is his name, played by Steve Zahn. Turns out I'm a Steve Zahn fan.
Yeah, I like Steve Zahn.
A bass player who is never directly named in the movie.
That's on purpose.
Yeah, played by Ethan Embry. And then the regular drummer is Chad, Giovanni Ribisi. And Guy and Chad know of each other, and they don't think very well of each other's performance. Apparently, Guy thinks that every song is Wipeout, according to Chad.
Which is kind of telling.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But then, because of... Some shenanigans involving trying to play leapfrog over a parking meter, Chad breaks his arm. So this group to play at the talent show needs a drummer. So they go meet Guy, and Guy's like, sure, one song, I'll be happy to do it. And he's obviously a pretty accomplished musician. Well, accomplished maybe is the wrong word. He's a very talented drummer. And these guys have a variety of skill levels. Like, the bass player is hilarious because he basically is looking at his bass the entire time. He's just happy to get the chords down.
Well, and the joke, if you look at IMDb credits, he's listed as TB player, which is the bass player.
Oh, that's funny.
That's his character's name. I think that's the credits name, too. It's just TB player.
And then Jimmy is the good-looking lead player. Leader of the band, and Lenny is the cute, irascible guitarist. So Guy comes and goes to the practice at their house. Oh, there's one more member of the band who's Jimmy's girlfriend, and that is Faye, played by Liv Tyler. And she's an integral member of the band, even though she doesn't actually play an instrument. She's like den mother, kind of.
Well, a little bit. She's active. She's very interested in keeping the band together. And she has affection for the band in addition to Jimmy.
Oh, yeah. And she provides like craft service and other support services.
Yeah.
Not in a creepy way. She's not a band-aid. She's a member of the band, at least in spirit.
Yeah.
She's been with the band longer than Guy has. Because Guy joins the band during the movie. So they meet at, Jimmy's garage. And they rehearse a ballad called That Thing You Do.
You know, something like, a little slower. Let's
too fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, that's, whoa. No, that's too fast.
Yeah, way too fast.
Slow down.
Slow down.
Good. Yeah.
This is not a polka. This is rock and roll.
And one of the things they remark is that Guy is going too fast on the drums. It needs to be slow, slow. And it's a ballad. So they go to the talent show. Oh, by the way, they're trying to come up with a name. It's kind of funny. And Faye comes up with The Wonders, spelled O-N-E-D-E-R-S, which leads to a whole lot of O-Neaters gags.
Yeah, it actually kind of pays itself off repeatedly throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty fun. So they're the Wonders. Tip of the hat to Dr. Wonders. Every time they said the Wonders, I thought of Dr. Wonders.
Mr. Dr. Wonders, would you be flattered by that?
Well, I didn't imagine him in like a red suit running on stage, but I could probably do that.
Oh, well, you know.
Not in a creepy
Everybody way. Has to have goals.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so, of course, at the talent show, Guy can't help himself, and he sets a much faster tempo, and the audience goes wild.
They go effing crazy.
They hit the meter to all the way past super to wicked.
Oh, how times have changed.
Yes. So they win the $100 top prize. And they are approached by the proprietor of a pizza parlor proprietor, who offers them a paying performance.
The pizza parlor provider offers them paying performance?
I can't come up with the rest of it. There's one more P. You need groups of three. periodic paid performances? I don't know. How about the pizza parlor proprietor offers them periodic paid performance? Nah, it doesn't work. Anyway. So they offer.
We've wasted enough time on that.
Yeah, well, this might be like a 25-minute episode. We'll see where it goes. Especially if I edit it as tightly as the last one, where I took out all the pauses.
Again, to me, it sounded like a conversation like we were sitting next to each other in the same room.
Yeah,
that's how it sounded edited. It was very tight. I mean, I liked it. So.
Oh, good. Well, we'll. Hey, we'll see how tight we can make it. We'll do it on purpose. So it sounds like we're going at like 1.5 speed because I tend to talk in mumble anyway, so we can go real fast.
Maybe you should work on slowing yourself down a little.
Well, we'll try. I don't want to be accused of using a radio voice when I'm talking on the podcast. Ready with the ones and twos. Here we go. Back to the show. And we're back.
Yeah, don't do that. That's terrible.
Isn't it? Yeah. So anyway, at their pizza parlor performances, they come up with the idea of putting out a record. Or actually, one of the audience members says, hey, why don't you make a record? And then, as if a light bulb goes off, they end up going to visit Guy's Uncle Bob, played by the wonderful Chris Isaak. And at his church, they record That Thing You Do, and then the ballad on the B-side, the other ballad. And that's pretty much that. They play at the pizza place, but Guy still has to work for his dad's appliance shop until they hear their song. Well, I'm sorry. Before that, Guy is approached by a local talent manager, Phil Horace, played by Chris Ellis, who has a swanky camper.
Yeah, that's creepy.
And he gets the band to sign a contract, and he promises them within a week or 10 days tops, he'll have their song on the radio. And there's a
sure
funny,
you will.
Yeah, there's a funny little thing where a guy buys a bunch of cheap transistor radios from the appliance store, and so they can all listen to different radio stations. And sure enough, in about a week, their song gets played on the radio. And that's when things start to get a little serious and fun. Because now they're going to go to a larger gig in Pittsburgh, the big time. And Pittsburgh is where we meet, what is his name? Boss Vic something or other?
Kevin Pollak. Vic Koss, the yes. Mattress King.
Yes, Boss Vic Koss, who is the MC of this talent show or performance or whatever it is.
So before we get too far afield, I want to go back. I just want to, since we're going through the movie plot. In the beginning of the movie, when he's driving his little, was it a Karmann gear or was it a Porsche guy?
I'm not sure. This is the one time where I didn't look up the vehicles.
Whatever little shitbox he was driving, which is a classic car. I think it may have been a Volvo, but I don't know. You know what? Somebody can write in or call in if they want to tell us. He had a Blaupunkt radio, and I'm like, yes. No Blaupunkt radio in a car ever sounded that good, first of all.
Well, yeah.
But he kept up with this terrible I Am Spartacus business, which was actually started to get on my nerves.
Yes.
But did he live at home or did he have his own apartment? It seemed like he had his own apartment.
Yeah, I believe he had his own apartment.
It just seems really kind of, he was living really well off. And maybe it's because it was Erie, Pennsylvania, but because he had a huge amount of records in his apartment.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I mean, you know, his dad couldn't have been paying him awful lot right. to work for the appliance store.
Especially because his mother was, you know, playing an electric organ in the shop, which is creepy.
Oh, well, that was hysterical because she was playing like dirge music. I was waiting for him to actually seriously sit down and start like doing a little bit busting of out. Jerry Lee Lewis or something.
Yeah. But I thought it was hilarious as they're playing at the little airport shack bar when the planes are rumbling overhead and then they have to announce that the pizza is ready.
Yes.
So.
Oh, yeah. But no. Fun stuff
but
all around.
Still. Yeah. But when they're all crammed in the camper van, you know, he's talking about make sure that they all get it right, and he uses the stew analogy.
You know, Guy, one of the good things about your group is there's a nice, natural, raw quality. I like that.
Thank you.
And I want to tell you, I've been around, and I think this is a hit record. Now, I found that a hit record is like a stew. All the ingredients have to cook together just right. Otherwise, it's just soup.
It's just cringeworthy. And then Guy has this recurrent, up to now, we see him twice now crash his car into somebody else's car.
Yes. Yeah, Guy's not a great driver.
Yeah, he seems to be a pretty terrible driver. But when he did get the transistor radios, it made me laugh because I'm like, oh, that's the transistor radios with the little single earbud that work for about 15 minutes until the cord frays and
yes.
can no longer, you know, like it'll get staticky. And in later years, boys and girls, when you have headphones that still had wires with them constantly, you would often have them where one side would go out and the other side would still work unless you jiggle the wires. Or sometimes the jack would go out and you'd only have one side. Then you'd go back to having mono sound.
Yeah, that's still how I burn through headphones, because I use wired headphones. Yeah. As it turns out, I'm very specific. The headphones I like are cheap, but they're very specific, and someday they're not going to make them anymore, and it's going to make me upset.
Oh, I see perhaps a hoarder issue.
Buy
like 50 pairs of them.
Well, they're a little expensive still for what you get. It's the Sony MDR G45s. They're behind the neck, but you can still hear really well if they're on your ears. You can still hear very well when your music isn't on. So I can wear them like 18 hours a day, and whether my iPod is on or not determines whether or not I'm paying attention to anybody else. But it doesn't like obstruct my hearing very much at all. Whereas like the over the ear headphones really would. I don't like those. I'm never going to buy a $200 pair of $300 pair of Dr. Dre's or whatever, because or Beats by Dre. Because to me, A, I'm going to get that cord stuck in a door or something and rip it in half. And there goes my $300. I'm going to get hit by a bus because I won't be able to hear.
Yeah. I have these Sony earbuds, which I think you've probably seen because I've left them many times in Alaska and had to have them sent back to me. And they were like $60 when I bought them, and they're earbuds and they're solid and they're like bass boosting ones, but they're the best little Sony earbuds I've ever had. Normally I can't wear them because they drive me just bonkers. But these are really comfortable and have really good sound. Now we're totally just an audio talk. But I get the cord snagged all the time. So with the advent of how many Apple phones and devices I've had that come with headphones, I've moved to the Apple earbuds, although they're not as comfortable. I think because my Sonys have the little silicone plug ear inserts and the Apple earbuds are just solid plastic. I don't think they're quite as comfortable. So I can't wear those as long. I do have a Motorola Bluetooth headset that I use when I'm walking. Or like around the house, or when I was walking the dog before the unfortunate happening of not being able to walk as well, the Bluetooth would go with me. But you know, Bluetooth still isn't quite; it still gets interference and not quite perfect. So for me, I know I'm probably a throwback, and still like I like the wires.
Oh, me too. And I had a pair. Well, I still have a pair of Bluetooth headphones that I never use. And I had a pair of Bluetooth headphones that I used when I was walking for exercise. And all it took was to get them sweaty once and totally burned it out because they weren't specifically made for exercising. So they were basically made to wick up any moisture and short out the circuitry right away.
unfortunate.
Yeah, so that was like an $80 pair of headphones instead of the $15 pair, the G45s from Sony. And I've got some RCA ones that I think I got for $5 a pair. So I have three pairs of those, three pairs of the Sonys. So, but I've had, you know, I have several pairs of like the over-the-ear headphones that were kind of part of when I was buying podcasting gear. But I just can't wear them. If they block out the sound to the rest of the house, how am I going to hear the dog barking in the background? Oh, wait. I can just listen to the replay because your mom was saying that when she was walking, she thought that Alice was going to go crazy because there kept being a dog barking that she could hear. Turns out it was my dog she was hearing. Because when she walks the dog, if they hear a dog bark, she thinks Alice is going to go take off after it.
Well, to be fair, that's not far from the truth.
Oh, no. She needs to be worried about it. But she was like on edge and couldn't see a dog. And then she heard a bark again. She's on edge. She can't see a dog. And it turns out it was just in her head. Okay. So, sorry. Back to the Oneaters. Yeah. So we get to see them sort of cutting their teeth. And they, you know, it's funny because it's 2 hours movie, whatever, roughly 2 hours, let's say. And you basically hear this one song over and over and over and over again, but it's such a pleasant song. It works out just fine.
See, and that was one thing I said. I thought that I would get tired of that song, except that I don't. And it really does kind of make the movie.
Yeah.
But I had a hard time because they really sound like the Rembrandts. If you were ever a fan of the band, the Rembrandts.
Oh, well, I watched Friends, if that's what you mean.
Oh, please tell me you know them for something other than that terrible show.
No, what else did they do?
They had albums before that show.
Okay. All right.
I own two of them. I think they actually had a hit at one point, but which is how they ended up singing on for the Friends thing. Anyway, I'm a big Rembrandts fan, so the band singing in this movie reminded me of the Rembrandts, and I know it wasn't them, but I had a hell of a time, and nobody really is credited for doing the singing.
Well, you know who wrote the songs, right? Or the song?
Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Now, was he working on Private Ryan? Is that what he... Because I think he wrote this while he was working on another movie.
He may have. I don't know.
Kind of fill the boredom or give it more, you know...
give him some levity, perhaps?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going for. Levity.
Yeah. Well, I would think on Saving Private Ryan, you would need some levity because... I mean... That is a fantastic film, but that's one of those Schindler's lists of movies where it's a really, really great film, but you don't want to watch it more than once.
Well, exactly.
At least, I mean, that was my opinion. I mean, I've seen it, admittedly, I've seen it a couple times, but not necessarily have I sought it out to watch on purpose. It's just kind of ended up I had to watch it more than once. And I saw it opening day in a classic movie theater in Portland. And when I say classic movie theater, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was still a 35 millimeter film in old squeaky theater seats that your feet stuck to the floor and the screen had shiny spots where they had to clean the screen where somebody had thrown candy at it.
Yeah, I think I saw it at the University Center, actually. Or maybe it was the Diamond Center. But yeah, it was it's good. It was intense. It was good.
No, oh yeah, because the opening alone, I mean, I wasn't sure that I was going to be able to sit through it because it was, the opening of the movie was just grueling. And I went with two women from work at the time and they were both like weeping. And so I was like, oh, is this going to be a long movie? And it's already a long movie, so it's going to be even longer for me.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, so back to Levity. Not really a date movie, that. This would be a good date movie, though, I think.
I think so. Very much so.
Because you just, you know, I mean, it's just, you're just having fun. This movie is just pretty much 100% fun. Even when there's tension, it's not super important, like serious tension. Although, I was anticipating a lot more darkness at the end, but that never came. But we'll get there.
You were expecting some giant devolving and some perhaps really, really acerbic venom spat back and forth.
Oh, no, I was thinking of something else, but we'll get there, I promise.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so at the Pittsburgh gig, they end up, Phil, their manager, introduced them to record company A&R man, Mr. White, played by Tom Hanks.
Now, right before they ended up going to Pittsburgh, when they're all losing their shit, when their song was being played on the radio, I think was one of the best scenes of the movie. Because it starts with Faye, like you see her like licking stamps and throwing them into a mailbox and like her realizing that the song is on and she freaks out and you believe her. I mean, she's, you know, to me, it was a very, very legitimate kind of ebullient moment. So I liked that part.
I mean, I just love Holmes Osborne, a name you wouldn't necessarily recognize by name, but Holmes Osborne plays Mr. Patterson, and he is so funny. It's he's the great, like, you know, grumpy dad that you need in this kind of movie.
Yeah, and well, he's pretty much the straight man to Guy's junior funny man. But see Faye freaking out, and then she goes to the bass player freaking out, who they then rush to the store, and then they're all freaking out in the store, and then that's when Lenny and, I think, was it Lenny and Jimmy show up? Anyway, they're all running around the shop just acting a fool, and I think it was a great scene. It really was, because you really kind of believe in that moment.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And when they actually get, when they meet Mr. White, and he tells them, oh no, we're going to sign you to Playtone Records. And you're going to do the tour of state fairs across the Midwest, which is another version of the big time. And that's when they get their matching suits and Guy gets his sunglasses. And they change their name to The Wonders, spelled like Dr. Wonders.
Yes.
And yeah, and then you have... just kind of a little bit of fun. Oh, by the way, I neglected this whole thing with Charlize Theron. She's actually Guy's girlfriend. They've been dating a year altogether with some breakup time in the middle.
Except for that time when she dumped him.
Yeah. And
which she says, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So how old is everybody supposed to be? They're all graduated from high school, right?
I mean, that's what it appears to me is like maybe they're just on the brink of going to college because the bass player signs up for the service.
Yes, he's going to be a Marine.
Yeah. And Chad, the unfortunate arm-broken drum player, gets a job at Patterson's. That guy basically abandons to go on tour. And so it all seems like they all needed jobs because they were heading into college or the next stage in their life.
Yeah.
Which is also where you get that... when they realize that Guy's going off, they get that great interchange between Darlene, his sister, and Guy Sr.
Well, you're an adult, so go on off and bang on your bongo drums as long as you like. Yeah. You do that. I'll tell her. Well, Mama, your son who loves you just left us in the lurch. Darlene, you just got promoted.
You mean you're gonna start paying me?
I didn't say that. Oh, hi, folks. How you doing today?
It's like crazy.
Yeah, like what? I'm gonna pay you? I'll let you live.
But there's a funny little interlude that, well, I don't know if it's an interlude, just a funny little story where Charlize Theron isn't super impressed by the music, but she is very impressed by the new dentist in town.
Oh, yeah, she wants drilled and filled repeatedly.
Yes.
Did I beat you to the pun?
No, it's fine. Oh, no, I appreciate it, but I don't have to say it. I just appreciate it. So
she wants a different kind of root canal.
There you go.
For all of our Australian listeners.
Yes, exactly.
I almost made an I Am Groot reference, but I decided not to.
Okay, I haven't seen that movie, so.
Come on.
Well, someday. So.
I could put it on the calendar in like 2017, 2018. Yeah, there we go.
Well, actually, I think that's one of the ones movies I'll just watch with Mom some Monday.
I think I made her watch it with me.
Oh, maybe you did.
I think she's seen it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely watch it again. It's great, but I've seen it probably well over a dozen times.
Turns out Drew and Jennifer made Mom and Dad watch Dead Snow in the cabin.
What?
Yes. It's very funny.
Why?
Well, because it's supposed to be sort of tongue-in-cheek. And it was tongue-in-cheek.
Tongue-in-cheek in a zombie movie?
Well, they're Nazi zombies. They're Nazi cursed zombies. Did you mean
literally tongue-in-cheek?
Well, yeah, in some cases.
I know nothing about the movie, but that would not happen. First of all, because I'd be at a cabin.
Well, that's part of the joy of it, was that they were at a cabin where these people were in a cabin as well. That's part of the
Oh,
the
hell story. No. Oh, hell no. No. Not going to happen. Are you kidding? No. And granted, I'm like Mom. I don't do horror movies. I can't. I just can't.
Well, hopefully you listen to the podcast, because I think there's some fun stuff in there.
I will listen to the podcast. I will not watch the movie.
Oh, it's fine. You won't have to.
I can only imagine. I'm trying to think what movie we tried to watch at the cabin, but it wasn't like that. Shaun of the Dead, which after 10 minutes...
Another zombie movie.
Both Mom and... Yeah, but that wasn't people trapped in a cabin.
All their children just come to the cabin to watch zombie movies.
But Shaun of the Dead, like 10 minutes, both Mom and Dad were like, no. And I was like, this is hilarious. You have to. And they were like, no. I was just summarily dismissed. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Well. And then I think we gravitated to watching some horrible British miniseries called 5 Days, which it was 5 days in an investigation, except it wasn't a linear 5 days. And it actually spanned like 4 years. So why it was called 5 days, I don't know. But, like, the first episode was day one, and the second episode was day two, and then, like, the third episode was day five, and the fourth episode was, like, day 100.
Hold on. Was this one that involves, like a disappearance where somebody left the car, like, on a...
Exactly.
A highway off-ramp or something?
The mom goes missing.
Yes, okay. I've seen that movie.
It's not a movie. It's a miniseries.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I've seen that mini. Yeah.
And of course, by the third episode, I realized it wasn't going anywhere, but I had to finish it because I had, you know, I had to get through it. But, oh my God, I was, and of course, Mother picked it. Totally blaming you, Mom. I'm totally throwing you under the bus, Mom. But I was just, and she's like, do you want to watch the last episode? I'm like, no, but I have to. You know, I have to, we have to complete it. I can't not see the end of it, but I don't want to watch this. So I think that was the follow-up to 10 minutes of Shaun of the Dead.
That's hilarious. Well, I'll have to pick out another zombie movie to take to the cabin then, I suppose.
Yeah, because that would be, you would make the only child that hasn't.
Yeah. Well, I've never spent the night at the cabin either.
Oh, have they?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Maybe before kids. Okay, so, sorry, back to the movie. Now we're with Playtone Records, and we go on this tour of state fairs. And they go from being just like a minor part of the act to, as their song climbs the charts, they become the feature attraction. And there's throngs of teenage girls who mob the band, much like the Beatles. And then they get an opportunity to go to California and appear in a low-budget beach movie. Where what's the, they're the Shrimp Shack, what's the name of the band? It's hilarious.
I don't know. It was so funny.
Jimmy he's the lead singer and he wrote The Thing You Do. He does not feel like they're taking, the band is not taking things seriously enough.
Jimmy is pretty super emo.
Yeah, he's very self-important.
Yeah.
And he just wants to go and record new music in the studio. But they've got all these other things they have to do.
And the rest of the band pretty much just wants to have fun because they want to live it up. Because I think in the prism of this movie, I think they realize that this is going to be very short-lived. And so they're just having a good time while the good time can be had.
Yeah. Yeah, because Lenny's just definitely in it for fun. Jimmy's super serious. Guy is our character, so he kind of goes between the two, you know, feeling it's, you know, he's excited about it, but knows it may not last. And then there's the bass player who's going to be a Marine in August anyway, so he's going to be out of the band. Yeah, so Jimmy is becoming more and more irritated. And along the way, we meet wonderful characters like Clint Howard as a jazz radio DJ.
It's a great appearance.
Yes. And then who played the record executive? Oh, Alex Rocco plays Saul Siler.
Oh, the crazy, leathery, over-tanned executive dude.
Yes.
Yeah. For a few moments, I thought, is that Joe Piscopo?
Yeah, it could have been, yeah.
And then I realized it wasn't, but I wanted it so much, so much. I wanted it to be Joe Piscopo.
Well, he plays the drums too, you know.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and he lifts weights and lost his funny. Anyway, so the group, at the point where Jimmy is dissatisfied at playing this stupid movie, they decide, and they're in California anyway, so that's where the bassist ends up leaving the band after like going AWOL from the band to go to Disneyland. And there's a fun relationship that the bass player has with a member of the another group, the Chanterlines.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just sort of fun. So, anyway.
Who are really kind of a Supremes knockoff.
Yes, yes. And at this point, this is where I was worried, because at this point, now, go ahead.
Let me ask. At this point, so it became evident to me like three quarters of the way through the movie that Playtone was a knockoff of all the popular, really, really super popular artists, where they were just getting people that sounded very similar to the popular artists so they could kind of get those generic-ish brand crossover.
You mean like in the movie itself, they were like
The movie itself, right.
Yeah, I could see that.
So this is like the big K of record labels.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like and looks a lot like and tastes a lot like, but not quite the original.
Yeah, exactly.
And probably a little more affordable.
You probably. And they're on the state fair tour. But yeah, so they end up, and okay, at this time I was a little worried because Faye gets the sniffles. Now, did you think that Faye was going to die of AIDS?
No. It was the 60s.
Did you think that Faye was going to die of consumption? Or that she was no. pregnant with Jimmy's baby?
It never occurred to me that she was going to die.
Okay. Or that she was pregnant?
You're so dark.
Oh, I was sure. And then when she got Jimmy sick, I was sure Jimmy was going to throw up live on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Because he had to
whatever
play
you
sick.
Do, don't think of pork chops.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So they get their moment on TV and it goes well. I was sure it was going to bomb, but nope, it goes well.
Well, but and the funny opening, when they had the opening footage where they had Chemstrand, a division of Monsanto.
Oh, yeah. Well, all these TV shows were underwritten by large companies. From, you know, the King Biscuit Flower Hour to the Texaco Radio Theater. I'm sure they had, I know there were television shows that were the same way too. But, yeah, so they're on TV, everything's going great, and they're going to go to the studio and record more songs. But before that, one of the things that pisses Jimmy off is, when they did the, they showed close-ups of them on TV, they put their names on there. And when they came to Jimmy's name, they put, you know, careful girls, he's engaged. Which, they weren't formally engaged. And he is a dick.
Yeah. He seems disproportionately angry that this happened. And he's blaming all kinds of people. And, of course, he's not blaming the very person who did it.
Yeah, of course not. Well, and yeah, and he also, he's dissatisfied with the band. It's all very, yeah, he's got a lot of issues. And Faye and Guy, you know, Guy has actually been very interested, way more attentive to Faye than Jimmy has. Even though she's Jimmy's girlfriend. And not attentive in a creepy way.
Yeah, he seemingly, though, isn't doing it out of some kind of hope that he's going to, like, make a move on her. It seems to be like he generally has affection for her, like, as his, I don't want to say as a sister, but he has affection for her more than just, like, the average girl that's hanging out in the band.
Yeah, well, he seems to be a generally nice guy.
Yeah.
In a way that Jimmy is not.
Well, he's got some issues.
How so? What issues does he have?
Well, he runs into people's cars.
Well, and, he's a bad driver.
And he wants to, and he throws his money around like he's a big shot.
That's true, he does. Yes, actually, yes, he's a man of some means.
And he makes, but he makes it known that that's the case.
Yes.
And he always has to be the kind of the center of attention because he's always got a story.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so Jimmy and Faye break up and Faye has a nice little speech. Where she describes how she's wasted all of her kisses on Jimmy, which I think is a very 1964 kind of speech.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but her pain is palpable.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's dying of consumption. Or she's got the sniffles.
It's just a cold.
Exactly. And then that's where she coughs into a handkerchief and it comes up with blood on it. And the next day she's dead of consumption. Anyway, during the recording session at the studio, first of all, Lenny does the bass player is already gone, so he's been replaced by the Wolfman, and
which is
who
awesome.
Actually is a legitimate bass player.
Yeah,
and then Lenny doesn't show up to the studio because he's eloped in Las Vegas with a Playtone secretary. Oh, actually, I think before that we meet Rita Wilson, right? At a cocktail lounge?
But moreover than that, you meet Mr. White's boyfriend.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yes. Which is pretty funny.
Who is played by?
Don't know.
Howie Long.
Howie Long, the football player?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You didn't notice that?
I did not notice that. That's funny.
I had forgotten that, and when I saw it, I laughed myself silly, because this is awesome. I wonder if he's credited. It's not, he's not credited. And his name was, Lloyd, right?
Yeah, let's see.
Because Gus Grissom made him Floyd.
Oh, yes. And guess who plays Gus Grissom?
Well, Bryan Cranston, who plays Gus Grissom in the Tom Hanks HBO miniseries, From the Moon to the Stars, Between the Moon and the Stars. I own it, by the way. It's awesome.
Oh, I did not know that. That's funny.
Yeah. So it was funny. It was, I'm pretty sure he played Gus Grissom in that. He plays Bud Aldrin.
Okay.
It was funny. He plays Buzz Aldrin, but he ends up playing astronauts in both, in two Tom Hanks vehicles. I digress. Howie Long. Yes. In the director's cut, Long makes a brief appearance as Lloyd.
Oh, so I must have seen the director's cut. 2 hours and 24 minutes long.
Yeah.
That's funny. Jonathan Demme has a cameo. Paul Feig has a cameo.
There's a lot of cameos.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Geach in the Shrimp Shack Shooters.
Yes. Yes. That's so funny. Captain Geach.
It's so terrible. I mean, it was terrible, but also not unimaginable for the time.
And what did they call, what do they keep calling Guy? What was his nickname?
Shades.
No, before that. In the movie, they keep calling him something, like Skeech or something. Or.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Geach?
No. There's a Canadian.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a Canadian comedian called Geechy Guy, which whenever I hear Geech, that's what I think of, is Geechy Guy.
Oh, wow. Jokes. You want to hear some dirty jokes? Okay, well, I'm just going to rattle off about 30 of them in about 4 minutes, and I'm just going to start and keep going. You ready? Here we go. Okay. Why should all women masturbate with these two fingers? Because they're mine. How can you tell when your girlfriend's fat? She can fit in your wife's clothes. You know what you get when you cross a Jehovah's Witness with an atheist? Somebody who knocks on your door for no fucking reason. The lady takes a hinge from the Home Depot counter and the guy says, you want a screw for that hinge? She says, no, but I'll blow you for the toaster. The little girl goes into a barbershop eating a snack. The barber says, you're getting hair all over your Twinkie. She goes, I know, I'm getting boobs too. A 7-year-old boy goes up to his dad and says, where do babies come from? His dad says, the stork. He says, you fucked a stork? A 17-year-old goes up to his dad and says, do you think I could get $50 for a blowjob? He says, I don't know. How good are you? Guy catches his son masturbating. He says, if you keep doing that, you're going to go blind. He says, Dad, I'm over here. 90-year-old guy goes to confession. He says, I've been sleeping with a 90-year-old woman. Priest says, say 20 Hail Marys. He says, I'm not Catholic. He says, then why are you telling me? He says, I'm telling everybody. 90-year-old guy gets pulled over by a cop. The cop says, do you realize your wife fell out a mile back? He says, thank God, I thought I went deaf. 90-year-old couple getting ready for bed. Husband's in bed. Wife comes out of the bathroom naked with a towel around her neck like a cape. She hops on the bed. She goes, super pussy. He looks at her and says, I'll take the soup. The bar owner goes up to the bartender. He says, you been sleeping with the waitress? He says, no. He says, good. You fire her. All right. Thank you very much, everybody.
So they get into the studio and so Lenny's not there and the bass player is not there. So it's just Guy and Jimmy and Mr. White, and Jimmy is all petulant and Mr. White's like, okay, here's the song. You're going to do some covers. And he's like, we're not doing covers. We're recording our songs. And Mr. White's like, no, you don't understand. You're doing what I say you're doing because that is the contract you signed. And Jimmy has a nice little I quit speech.
Well, he does a little I quit improv.
Yes. But And that leaves Guy just kind of like in the studio by himself, kind of, you know, his one big chance to record something in a real studio. And he's got no one to record with. And he's a drummer, so, you know, what's he going to do? And it's where he's like expressing that's like, oh, you know, so they're in breach of contract and he's all freaking out about it. And Mr. White's like, no, it's sad, but it's not really that big a deal. And it's a very common story. You're a one-hit wonder.
Ba-dum-bum.
And that's when fate has it that in the next, you know, in the same studio, but in another booth or whatever, we got some jazz guys playing, including Del Paxton, who is his idol. He's a jazz pianist.
Who he'd met in the bar the night before.
Yes, yes. Under the watchful eye of Rita Wilson, who plays Marguerite. Yes. So, so then they decided to jam a little bit. And so that's when he ends up, I guess he calls Clint Howard back at the jazz station. Where, by the way, the jazz station is hilarious because it's like a one-man show. And he's like, we don't take requests because, you know, this is all too good for you. I'm going to play what I think you need to hear. So Guy thinks he's just, you know, he's got to tell somebody. So he calls Clint Howard and says, hey, I'm in the studio with Del Paxton and these other guys are hanging around talking. And that's when Clint Howard is like, you need to get this on tape. You get this on tape, it's gold. And then, by the way, do you need a job? You can come back here if you bring those tapes with you, and you can have the 6 to midnight spot on the radio.
I can't pay anything.
Yeah. But I get to stay in California and play, you know, listen to jazz music, talk about jazz music. And then we have the end where we have the single best, by the way, Bellman, in the world.
Yeah, he is hands down the best.
Yes. So Faye and Guy end up together after a little some cute stuff. And the credits roll, but there's an epilogue that shows what happened to everybody.
Yeah.
And what's funny is what happened to everybody wasn't like for instance Jimmy records 3 gold albums with a new band called The Herdsmen on the Playtone label. And he's a successful record producer in Los Angeles. So, you know, it's not like there's like just desserts handed out in the epilogue. Basically, Guy and Faye marry, raise 4 children, and establish the Puget Sound Conservatory of Music in Bainbridge Island, Washington, where Guy teaches jazz. Again, Jimmy records with The Herdsmen. Becomes a record producer. Lenny is divorced and manages a casino in Laughlin, Nevada. And the bass player served 2 tours in Nam and is awarded the Purple Heart for wounds in Quezon and becomes a building contractor in Orlando, Florida. Which is sort of funny because, again, that's an allusion to Disney World, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
So,
which he had a great time at when he was in Disneyland.
Yeah. Oh, he did. He loved it. That was his big goal.
Yeah.
So there was a little trivia, the similarities to the Beatles. Did you catch that?
Well, they stole from the Beatles because they were talking about how the Beatles got their name.
Yeah.
I mean, there was lots of Beatles stealing. By the way, just for the record, Steve Zahn is noted as he actually played guitar and sang in this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's great. I love Steve Zahn. I'm a big Steve Zahn fan, as it turns out.
We'll yeah, to, me too.
I'll have to go on a Steve Zahn tour at some point. So here are the...
Well, I've been watching him on Modern Family because he's had a recurrent role for a couple episodes.
Oh, see, I can't be bothered with TV. Except now that I'm at your mom's house on Mondays, I get to watch shows like Limitless and Quantico, both of which are silly but fun.
Oh, I haven't seen either.
Yeah. It's, anyway. So here are the parallels listed with the Beatles. The band name, of course. And I guess Please Please Me, with the first Beatles hit, is just a sped up version of a slow ballad. In the Beatles' first appearance in the Ed Sullivan Show, a shot of John Lennon was accompanied by the caption, "Sorry, girls, he's married." Let's see. They reached fame after replacing the original drummer, and each group loses its original bass player. Yeah, and I guess the Beatles manager Brian Epstein was also gay. Let's see. When Faye gets mistaken for a fan and stopped by the police from following the band, Cynthia Lennon, John Lennon's wife, was stopped in a similar way when they're trying to board a train. But unlike the film's version, no one came back to retrieve Cynthia.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
But that wouldn't surprise anybody who really knows John Lennon.
Well.
Knew him, I should say.
Well, again, feet of clay. All the heroes have feet of clay.
Don't get me wrong. I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I like John Lennon as an artist. So.
Yeah, so this was a perfectly pleasant movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was good to intersperse this with all the darkness we've had.
Well, except for the dying of consumption, there was really no darkness in this whole movie.
Well, except Jimmy's little meltdown, explosion, implosion, where he wrecks the band. Because that you have some tension where you're not sure at the end where Guy's going to get Faye or not. And so there's some darker moments. But yeah, like I said, it's 95% positive, and the movie ends to me in a seemingly, pretty upbeat way.
Oh, and Dad and is all down with the band when they're on TV. Everybody's having a good time. Even Chad is on the couch, I think, at the Patterson home back in Erie.
Yeah, see, when I first saw this movie, I had expected this to be a darker movie than it ended up being. I kept expecting Guy's dad to die.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he had a heart attack or something, and Guy had to go back and work at the shop or something. I just expecting, something terribly, terribly, horribly tragic to happen that broke up the band. But as it turned out, no.
Well, and there's always the possibility of, that thing you do being written by Jimmy as being an allusion to the fact that he is a serial rapist going from state fair to state fair.
What?
Causing a trail of tears along the way.
What?
Or not. I mean, again, I was waiting for it to be slightly darker. Maybe I've been watching too many Halloween-type movies.
Yeah, no, way darker. Wow.
Anyway, he looked like a serial rapist. I'm just saying. So.
Well, you totally expect that he would roofie somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so like I said, I was a little put off by Tom Everett Scott as Guy Patterson because I really thought he looked like Tom Hanks. And in fact, Tom Hanks didn't want to hire him, but Rita Wilson said, "No, he's cute. He looks like you. Let's hire him." And so they did. And that's why they've been married so long, because Tom Hanks knows when to shut up and do the right thing.
No, we know who wears the pants in the Hanks family. Well, it's Rita Wilson.
Yes. Now, the budget for this movie is $26 million, and the box office was $34 million, so it's respectable.
Yeah.
That Thing You Do 2 didn't do so well, but partly because there wasn't as good a cast.
Oh, was there really a sequel?
No, of course not.
Oh, thank God. Oh. Oh.
Yeah, it's followed Giovanna Ribisi. Everybody became Scientologists. It was very sad. Or maybe, actually, Chad became a photographer and got married, but ended up spending time in Japan, and his wife gets seduced away by Bill Murray.
Are you taking Lost in Translation?
Yes. But since I haven't seen that movie.
It's a great movie.
I don't know.
What?
No. Well, it's funny. There's only two types of people. People that love that movie and people that were bored to tears of that movie, and I haven't seen it, so I just managed to avoid it. I own it, I think.
Oh, it's a great movie. You don't like Tom Hanks. You don't like Bill Murray. So you would have a hard time with that movie. But that movie doesn't pull any punches because it makes Bill Murray look like a dick, which you already think he's a dick. So
yeah.
You would like the movie.
I would argue that every movie makes Bill Murray look like he's a dick.
I don't think that's the case. I like Bill Murray. Groundhog Day didn't end up being a dick at the end.
Nobody had
Zombieland,
but he had 10,000 years or days or whatever to perfect that.
10,000 years in purgatory.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's the biggest horror movie we saw last year, I think. So yeah, anyway, so that thing you do, it was perfectly pleasant. It was a great sort of palate cleanser from the darkness before. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.